And we will move on to the fourth case for this morning, Sharashidze against Mukasey. Focal.
Yes. Good morning. Good morning. May it please the Court, my name is Mark Kokel. I am appearing on behalf of Otar Sharashidze. Mr. Sharashidze is a native and citizen of Georgia, and from the Abkhazia region of Georgia. This is an immigration case. We are seeking this Court's review of the Board of Immigration Appeals decision in June 2007 denying a motion to reopen. Mr. Sharashidze was ethnically cleansed from the Abkhazia region in the early 1990s, eventually settled in the United States in 1999 and was granted political asylum by the former Immigration and Naturalization Service.
Can we just fast forward to 2007 where, we dismissed his, we said that he hadn't exhausted his administrative remedies?
Yes.
And can you tell me now why or if he's exhausted his remedies regarding his due process claims as they relate to the IJ?
Yes, Judge.
Because I think that's your big problem here.
In 2007, shortly after another panel dismissed his original appeal, he filed a motion to reopen with the Board of Immigration Appeals. He sought sua sponte reopening by the board and outlined in detail all of the countervailing equities that the original immigration judge had never given him an opportunity to present when the immigration court originally denied his request for any relief in 2005. So that motion to reopen not only sought reopening sua sponte by the board, it also requested reopening based on changed country conditions in Georgia that had changed since the board's original decision in this case a couple of years ago. Finally,
can I zero in on the MV? Because one of the things, I'm just looking at the board's June 12, 2007 order, which is the only thing before us at this point. And my understanding is that the board felt that he should have gone to it sooner with this motion for reopening. This is an untimely motion for reopening, that there are no equities that should require it to waive its timeliness requirements. I mean, it's an administrative agency, and it's entitled to regularize its proceedings. They admit there's no time limit if it's a changed circumstances issue, but that's a very factually sensitive decision. I'm not sure we have any jurisdiction to decide whether circumstances have changed 5%, that's enough, or do they need to change 10% or 20% or what?
Well, our argument on the issue of changed country conditions is more regarding the standard that the board used as opposed to reviewing the proper standard under the regulations, which is new and unavailable evidence that could not be presented at an earlier hearing. The board focused on some sense of cumulative evidence, which is not the standard by which to we argue that motion should have been decided on that issue.
But I don't know what you think. I mean, of course it is. So you think anytime somebody comes up with, say, the 2007 State Department report in place of the 2005 State Department report, that allows you to reopen? I mean, clearly the 2007 report wasn't written as of 2005, so it's new and it wasn't available.
Right. The board, though, however, undertook absolutely no review of evidence other than quoting what the government had stated in its opposition to our motion.
See, now you're getting to the substance. I'm trying to see if you're making a legal argument about what amounts to new or changed evidence, then there's that issue. If you're supposed to actually read the report and see how much conditions have changed in Georgia or anywhere else, have they gotten worse, are they about the same, does this look like the same story we heard last time? That's a very factual inquiry.
I agree. That is a factual inquiry. Our argument here, though, is that the board did not review the facts that were included with the motion to reopen. The motion to reopen, which is before this tribunal, was nearly 1,000 pages long, and the board got rid of it on some standard of cumulative evidence and does not explain at all how indeed that evidence was cumulative.
And we don't require the board to write 500-page opinions, you know, going through. Indeed, this is actually kind of a long opinion by board standards. Runs two full pages.
Our position is the same. We don't expect a 500-page decision, but a decision that addresses this particular issue regarding changed country conditions. The board did not outline anything other than claiming that these facts were cumulative, and taking a case that this circuit has decided on a different factual issue, the Zhao decision.
Right, I see that.
And with respect,
but where do you have a regulation, a statutory provision, a case that specifies as a matter of law how thorough the board's explanations need to be? Because I'm not aware of anything.
Well, as far as an issue of law, it does get back to the. It does eventually get back to the issue of a full and fair hearing, which is an issue that this circuit has looked at when reviewing board decisions in the past, and whether or not an applicant has truly gotten a full and fair analysis of a case by the tribunal.
But your opponent argues that when you move to that, you really have almost assumed that the motion to reopen has been granted, and now you're looking to the underlying process. And don't we need to stay at that first step, see whether the motion to reopen should have been granted?
And finding that there is a question of law to determine if the standard used by the board in denying the motion to reopen is our position, that this circuit does have the power and the authority and the jurisdiction to review that particular part of the board's decision. There are other parts of the board's decision that we feel are substantial enough for this court to reverse this decision and remand it back to the Board of Immigration Appeals and eventually the Immigration Court.
But what I'm having trouble understanding, maybe you can just summarize, is, you know, in short sentences, what are the questions of law that you are asking us to decide? 1, 2, 3, whatever they are.
Whether the board reviewed and applied the regulatory definition of what is required for a motion to reopen, new, as to whether or not new and previously unavailable evidence, material evidence, was presented with the motion to reopen. That issue in front of the Board of Immigration Appeals, when the court looks at that legal question, was there new material evidence that was presented with the motion? The answer to that is yes, there was. The analysis can then go further. What was the board's decision in this situation? What was the board's standard in denying this motion to reopen? And it had nothing to do with new or material evidence. It referred to cumulative evidence, which from our position is very, very confusing, because this record in front of the board and in front of the immigration court had no evidence that it would be cumulative of. The board and the government, or the government was able to get the board to agree that this evidence was cumulative. It's cumulative because the government approved Mr. Shaarshidze for political asylum in 1999. The government is now saying that this evidence presented for the very first time to the Executive Office for Immigration Review, for the very first time, that is somehow cumulative of past evidence presented in any court proceedings. There were no court proceedings prior to Mr. Shaarshidze being placed into removal proceedings in 2005. So when you get to that stage, that there is a legal question, did they apply the proper standard, and then you look at the standard indeed applied, it's the wrong standard. Cumulative of, there's nothing cumulative in the record. I would ask to reserve
left.
I would ask to reserve 1 minute for rebuttal.
Mr. Grimes.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is James Grimes. I'm here on behalf of the Attorney General. And I'll try and take the court's questions in the order they were asked, starting with Judge Williams' question about the exhaustion issue. If you look to pages 30, 31, and 32 of the record, Mr. Scheraziji was raising an issue about sua sponte reopening. He laid out sort of a legal framework for evidence, for his ability to present evidence, but he did not follow that up with an argument that the immigration judge erred. He followed that up with an argument starting at page 32 that his counsel hadn't presented evidence, and he went on from page 32 to 41 talking about evidence that his counsel didn't present. So he didn't present an argument about what the IJ did or didn't do or should or shouldn't have done. And Judge Wood, as you pointed out, this is an untimely motion. Immigration judge error is not an independent basis for granting an untimely motion. So even if he had raised that issue, I'm not sure it would have gotten him anywhere.
What about Mr. Kokol's last point? This is a bit of an odd case in that, unlike many we see, it begins at the beginning of time with Mr. Scheraziji getting a grant of asylum. We usually see people who fail on that.
That's right.
So he wins, and then obviously the unfortunate subsequent events happen. But what is this new evidence he was trying to present cumulative to? If the board is speaking nonsense, then maybe there is some question that's reviewable.
I think it's cumulative of the evidence that had existed with respect to his previous grant of asylum.
Right. In other words, it's still good enough for asylum.
Well, it would be if he's not eligible for asylum now.
I understand that, but then we get to the withholding and CAT and other kinds of waivers.
But he has to get past, if he had filed a timely motion to reopen, then we wouldn't even be talking about the changed country conditions issue. He has to get past the changed country conditions issue as an exception to the timeliness requirement.
No, I understand that, but I guess what I'm confused by is if as you say, this really deals just with timing, and earlier his evidence was sufficient to support asylum, we don't know. It might have also been sufficient to support withholding of removal or CAT. There was no need to reach those issues once
got
the asylum grant, but arguably he presents satisfactory evidence. He comes in and shows that there hasn't been some velvet revolution in Georgia that has led to democracy and happiness for all, so things are still bad in Georgia. So why isn't that enough to show that the conditions in Georgia still would support, in an appropriate case, withholding or CAT relief?
Well, it might be, Your Honor, if he had filed a timely motion to reopen.
I'm looking at the changed circumstances. Suppose circumstances have gotten a little bit worse. That's not cumulative evidence. The board could say, I don't think there's a change. The board could say many things, but cumulative doesn't make any sense if it's against nothing as a background.
Well, the background is
success as a background.
The background is what was going on when he was granted asylum before.
Right, and what was going on then was enough for asylum in his case. That's what I'm saying. If he had been denied asylum and the board said, look, you know, we denied it before, you haven't shown us that things have gotten much worse, fine, you know, the board makes calls like that all the time, but it's, I'm having trouble fitting this structure into a situation where on the merits of the asylum, putting to one side the aggravated felony, he had shown enough.
Well, maybe I can clear that up. If we weren't looking at an untimely motion, he could have filed his motion to reopen and said, look, I'll qualify for withholding and I can qualify for convention protection under Convention Against Torture. But his motion wasn't timely, so he has to get over that hurdle. He has to, the statute and the regulations say, if you're going to file an untimely motion, you've got to show changed conditions. So he has to show a change.
And what's the baseline? When would a timely motion have? What was his last date on this record for a timely motion, in your view?
Well, it would have been August of 2006 or 2007. I'm sorry, but it would have been 90 days after the previous board decision. It would have been timely. And so,
days after the board decision that was then appealed to this court,
that's correct. Yes, Your Honor.
Petition for
so he could have filed one within 90 days of then and said, look, I could qualify for withholding or protection under the convention. He didn't file it timely, so he has to then show a change in conditions to excuse the fact that it wasn't timely.
And does that change have to take place between the 90-day point that you just mentioned or between the date of the board's May 25, 2006 decision.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
The brackets.
This court's case law says, stands for the proposition, the change has to be since the last board decision.
So since his burden, in your view, was to show material change since May 25, 2006.
That's correct, Your Honor. And we've argued that his argument about whether he made that showing is a factual determination, and because of the criminal review bar, he wouldn't get very far. Now, as I understood his argument in his brief, his argument was that the board didn't sufficiently explain why he didn't do that. But I think the board gave him three accurate reasons, referring specifically to the pages of his motion that were relevant, which would be pages 51 and 52. Yes, he did file about 1,800 pages of exhibits, but the relevant portions of his argument were those portions that were cited by the board. So and the decision Your Honor had asked about, what's the standard? Mansour is page 33 of the government's brief that says, can't you tell whether the board looked at his argument and considered it? Well, the board talked about the specific pages of his argument and said, look, your evidence is, it's not new, it's not a material change, and it doesn't specifically relate to you. He talked about problems in the breakaway republic. Well, those have been going on since 1992. He talked about things that police officers were doing to detainees, and he said that on that basis it shows that what was going on before continues. That's a continuation of a previous problem. He said he couldn't go back to Abkhazia. Well, whether that has anything to do specifically with him is unclear, because he left Abkhazia in 1994 and spent 4 years in Tbilisi, if I read his declaration at page 365 correctly. So he didn't show a change since the previous board decision. He actually hadn't shown a change since the time he was granted asylum. And so that's his problem. He has to show a change in order to excuse the fact that it wasn't timely. If it had been timely, then we would be operating under a different framework. But he hadn't done that. And so that, if that answers Your Honor's question, I hope it does, that just leaves us with the equitable tolling issue. And as we've argued, that's due diligence is a factual determination.
He seems to argue that from an equitable tolling point of view, the correct legal rule, I think I picked this up in his reply brief, is that the date that this court ruled and ultimately rejected his petition in the earlier case is relevant. I mean, this new motion is only a few weeks after that, 6 or 7 weeks, something like that.
Well, we would first... We believe it's a factual question, but even if it's not a factual question, he didn't need this court to tell him that he hadn't raised this issue before. All his counsel had to do was read the previous board, previous brief to the board to see that it hadn't been raised. And I think the argument is in some tension with the Supreme Court's decision in Stone, where the court said filing of a petition for review does not toll the time. So I think that he would have some difficulty with that. And I think if you look at page 27 of his opening brief, the standard he espouses is the same one the board used at page 3, and that is the standard this court has announced, and that is, could he reasonably have been expected to have filed earlier? And the answer to that question is yes, and that's a factual determination. So unless there are any further questions, for the reasons I've stated and are stated in our brief, we ask that you dismiss the petition for review, because he hasn't raised a valid constitutional or legal challenge to the decision.
All right. Thank you very much. And you have a minute, Mr. Kokol.
Picking up on the government's last point, as far as not raising a constitutional issue, to be quite frank, yes, we have. The constitutional issue here, obviously Mr. Sharshidi has a liberty interest in not being removed from the United States. All of the evidence that he has attempted to have someone review has never been acknowledged by the Board of Immigration Appeals with respect to the countervailing equities, which is central and primary to the 209C relief, which we are arguing he never, ever got a full nor fair hearing on, never got a hearing at all. The last time Mr. Sharshidi was in removal proceedings, last time he appeared, the judge said, I'm going to bring you back and we'll determine at that point what the relief will be going forward. Just give me, at this point, through counsel, just give me an idea of what you're going to, you know, of what your position is going to be. That's it. The immigration judge, after that, made a decision finding that Mr. Sharshidi was not eligible for adjustment of status, even though he was an asylee, and even though the regulations and board precedent case law says that he had the right to a hearing on countervailing equities before the board would terminate his asylum. And that asylum, once again for the court, does establish his eligibility, his qualification for withholding, which again is part of our argument that he has still never gotten a full or fair hearing before any tribunal. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kokol. Thank you, Mr. Grimes. We will take the case under advisement.